Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Chris Hutton. Our first news story today is putting some numbers behind what many, I think, have suspected, which is the sheer amount of damage that the so-called construction mafias have caused to South Africa's government and economy over the past couple of years. So just a refresher, construction mafias are essentially these groups of people who usually pretend to be some kind of local community organization representing a small business in an area. And what they will do is they will show up on a construction site, a government one, or sometimes even a private construction site, and basically tell whoever's doing the contract that they need to be cut in the deal or else bad things will happen. This involves sometimes attacking or intimidating the construction workers. Sometimes it means vandalizing things, all sorts of stuff like that. Deputy Minister of Finance, the DA's Ashur Surupan, says that the construction industry is suffering from these mafias, which will often demand up to 30% of a contract's value and undermine the integrity of the procurement systems. Surupan said, construction projects also have an unmatched multiplier effect. For every 1 million rand invested in construction, more than 3 jobs are created. This is the highest multiplier across all sectors in our economy. Apparently, according to some of the figures that he talked about, construction mafias have disrupted more than 180 projects worth 63 billion rand in the last 5 years, using tactics such as extortion, intimidation, violence, and sabotage. The police minister, Senzo Machuno, recently said that there had been a couple of successes against construction mafias, saying that the worst affected provinces were, unsurprisingly, KZN, Gauteng, the Western Cape, and the Eastern Cape, which are also the places where we have the highest crime in general. The police minister said, quote, if I could just share one success story. At the George Mukhari Hospital in Gauteng, there's a project underway, the building of an ontology unit. Now, a group of alleged community members stopped the site, assaulted the site manager, damaged the property, and stopped delivery trucks from delivering. A case was opened November 9th with charges listed as assault, intimidation, extortion, and trespassing. A strategic operation was conducted yesterday, and as a result, 3 male adults were arrested. We are not going to spend a long time condemning and lamenting on this. We are rather inviting our brothers and sisters who are on the wrong side to join us in constructing a South Africa we want. Chris, this is, I think, increasingly taking a focus in government. I know that the public infrastructure minister, Dean McPherson, has made a big deal about the construction mafias and the damage they caused to South Africa. This really does, though, seem to have been caused by, firstly, not great policing, the fact that police are not following through and protecting people that they should be and making sure these cases go all the way to conviction. And also, I think one of the problems here is that you've got this melding in many cases. There are definite links between construction mafias and politicians. And you've kind of got this blending together of politics, money, business, construction all together, which makes these mafias often protected politically by various politicians. And I think KZN is perhaps the province where this is the worst and most apparent. What's your take on the story?
I think what you highlight in terms of the connections and the links between the SAPs, prosecuting authorities, and then players within these different mafias, that shouldn't be discounted or dismissed too easily, because it'll be very difficult to break up those relationships, the perverse incentives, the motivation behind those connections and those contracts, you know, if you want to call them contracts, being sort of established in the first place, because it gives you, as this unscrupulous actor, access. It gives you the ability to set your terms, and then you know you're in effect protected from prosecution by the law, by the police and authority. So I think it's going to take a lot of work. I'm not going to say it's not. I'm not going to say it's impossible, but you need buy-in across the board. You need to capacitate the police and the intelligence services, especially detectives. And then on the other hand, your authorities like the National Prosecuting Authority ensure that your courts are as well staffed and run as possible. And lastly, I think on the business and community side, to get buy-in from there as well, to ensure that any individuals or groups who engage on these terms aren't even sort of allowed into the room in the first place. There's nothing around negotiation or can we meet and talk this out. If these measures are used, either direct sort of violence or influence in that way or indirectly, I think the full extent of the law should be pursued in that regard. Yesterday evening on Kijknet in Gesprek, the weekly show hosted by Lorenzo Eckhart, Jeff Wicks, who's an investigative journalist at News 24, they talked about various sort of whistleblowing issues when whistleblowers approach journalists, the concerns they have around their livelihoods and their lives indeed. And he just highlighted when so many examples arise of the mixing between construction mafias, between, you know, corrupt individuals and the police, the authorities, it also makes it more difficult to actually deal with these issues in the first place. So we're seeing more and more people talk about this. You're getting the information out there. I don't want to discount that because in many countries that wouldn't happen. I'm not saying that solves the problem in and of itself, but at least I think there's a realization in terms of the moral damage this does to the country, the country's economic growth prospects, and just the basic economic activity of the sort of day-to-day, as the deputy minister has now recently highlighted.
I think one thing missing from the mainstream discussion is how much of an influence these demands for inclusion in these projects is often kind of premised on the same sort of logic that leads to sort of racial and gender quotas and other things like that. A government is obsessed in all of its plans. Generally, the ANC has made sure to include that, no, all this project must benefit youth, disabled, women, Black people in particular. It always has like a list of criteria of groups who should be most favored, and sometimes included in those group, in that group of sort of people who need to be lifted up by government projects or business investment or whatever, is local communities. And that's often used as a kind of lever to get the construction mafia's foot in the door, as they'll say. No, but we're just the local community, and that's why you need to include us. And if you say no, if you don't give them terms they agree with, very quickly it turns into, well, you know, if you don't include us, maybe your construction workers will be murdered and your site will be burned down, which is, of course, not acceptable and no way that anyone in this country can do business. Anyway, let us move on to our next story. This is the latest in the ongoing fallout from the Pretoria High School for Girls battle between the school governing board and the Department of Basic Education, the Gauteng Department of Education, rather. The Gauteng Department of Education got sort of swept up in these accusations that 12 white girls at Pretoria Girls were making racially insensitive comments or being racist on a WhatsApp group. The charges against these girls fell apart. The school governing board later found them innocent. The Thabo Mbeki Foundation then sort of wandered into the thing after the Gauteng Department of Education had claimed, after the exoneration of these girls, that it was still going to do some sort of investigation into racism of an unspecified scope and type at the school. With the Thabo Mbeki Foundation actually wading into this, and Thabo Mbeki condemning the Gauteng Education Department quite aggressively, saying that it was an unjustified and groundless witch hunt for further examples of racism. There were then the latest development in the story is that the school governing board says that it is going to be taking the Gauteng Department of Education to court over these racism claims. They talk about the weakness of some of the claims of racism at the school. One which they talk about here was that one of the claims made against the school was that white educators do not greet their black colleagues, to which the school governing board has said this is a generalization so vague, unproven, and unprovable that it does not belong in any self-respecting report. The school and its SGB shouldn't be in this adversarial relationship with the department. The principal and staff of Pretoria School for Girls are prohibited by the Department of Education from speaking up. Only the school's school governing board may speak for it. So it has the right to right these wrongs. And that's why they've launched this application, they went on to say. Chris, this is really, I think, you know, Lesufi is often kind of, I think, in his department of education in Gauteng, have often played, I think, a little bit fast and loose with some of these racism allegations. But it really seems like on this one, the ground has kind of fallen away from them. And when you see attacks from, you know, respected people within the ANC like Thabo Mbeki, you kind of think to yourself, maybe this is going to be a much bigger problem for Lesufi and his government than first imagined.
Yeah, there's so much good in the statement by the school governing board to, I think, give credit to and to highlight, responding to these allegations and the way in which the department has conducted itself, calling that out in very clear, objective terms, setting out how the SGB thinks this whole thing has been conducted and how they want things to be resolved. I mean, for example, the statement includes that the SGB describes racism as abhorrent and that even allegations of racism leave an indelible stain, which is why it is crucial to exercise extreme caution when accusing anyone of such a serious offense. They add that unsubstantiated and ungrounded allegations of racism are what PHSG and learners at the school have been subjected to at the instance of the very body from which the school and its learners should have been entitled to expect protection and not its opposite, the GDE. I mean, yeah, that really does, I think, summarize it better than anything else could, and why it's so important for SGBs to continue to exist and have the powers and remit that they do have, which, of course, is something that the Basic Education Laws Amendment Act would, if not fundamentally, dilute so as to effectively render them non-entities, at least very much limit how they can operate, and indeed puts even more control over them on the part of provincial departments of education. So lots of things involved here, interconnected, but I think credit to the SGB, to the school, to the learners there, who I think another example of South Africans want things to work. They want to focus on the problems that affect all of them on a day-to-day basis. They want to deal with issues like racism when it arises, when it is racism. But otherwise, they also, I think, want the authorities to realize they should play the role that they're circumscribed to do. And otherwise, schools will push back. And I think this is a very good example of that.
It's also one of the reasons why I think the Bella Bill is so insidious, because it would reduce the amount of influence that a school governing board might have to resist the education department in its province in various instances. Okay, last story. Ramaphosa has said that he's welcomed the fact that South Africa is going to be taking over the presidency of the G20 soon, on December 1st, taking over from Brazil. The presidency of the G20 is a sort of group of countries of larger economies in the world that meets together and works out to develop global institutions and trade and all that sort of thing. The presidency of that organization rotates, and it is now South Africa's turn to be taking it on. Ramaphosa has talked about the urgent need to reform global institutions, that these institutions must be reformed so that they become more representative of global governance and not just sort of representing the bigger powers. I suspect the main target here is the UN Security Council with its 5 permanent members who have veto power. You know, one of the things that always frustrates me a little bit about this is often you see countries like sort of Russia and China talking about the multipolar world. They talk about, the world is changing and we must reform institutions to be multipolar. And a lot of countries understandably go along with this talk, right? Because they say, well, we want a head at the table. We want a seat at the table. We want to control these global institutions. Of course, what's always kind of funny about it is, you know, Russia and China aren't being sincere, I think, when they say we want to reform global institutions to make them more representative. What they mean by that is they want China and Russia to be making the decisions in global institutions, not the United States and Europe. Anyway, Chris, what do you make of Ramaphosa's talking this up? I mean, you know, it's kind of difficult, I think, sometimes with some of these bigger organizations to see what these big international organizations to see what sort of benefit they really get for the countries involved. What should South Africa do, and what do you think it will do with its presidency of the G20?
yeah, a lot of these platforms risk just becoming talk shops because there's flowery language on the part of all the attendees, the United States, South Africa, others, but then there isn't sort of action or implementation in terms of coming to any sort of agreement on priorities or even values. If you talk about a body as representative as the G20 with all the countries involved, is there a common framework in terms of respect for democracy, the rule of law, human rights, all of those considerations? Maybe if you don't have some of those in place, then it becomes more difficult for the body itself, any statements that it puts out, to be taken seriously in terms of just pure practicality. There are elements of what the president said that I would agree with, for example, the modernization of the UN. There's also talk about some reforms of the global financial system. But then something already to sort of critique or to raise a flag around is more ambitious targets for grants and concessional financing. Now, does that mean you as a government don't want such quote-unquote strenuous conditions when you take on debt relief, which I don't think would be the correct thing for any country, whether it's a quote-unquote more developed or developing country, to get to sort of delay your debt commitments? That doesn't force you to get your own fiscal house in order, regardless of how stringent you think maybe global financing loan programs are on the part of the International Monetary Fund, maybe the World Bank, etc. So almost every sentence has elements of, yes, I go along with this, but what are you doing within your own country or within your own backyard, for example? So the president also talked about issues in Gaza, highlighted that. But then at the same time, South Africa doesn't set any sort of red line in terms of what's happened with the elections in Mozambique in last month and how the ruling party there ensure that they remain
or Zimbabwe.
In power. It's in your own backyard. So you wanted to come in?
Yeah, no, I just said or Zimbabwe. It's not just Mozambique. Right. Actually sort of actually, to be honest, you could say most of Africa. Our right. government is remarkably quiet when it comes to, you know, subversion of democratic institutions, abuse of human rights. There have been a huge number of coups all over the continent over the last couple of years. Doesn't really seem to be a priority, apparently, for the South African government, which is so apparently concerned with being a moral superpower in the diplomatic right. world.
Yeah, so, I mean, for South Africa having the chairmanship or the presidency of the G20 next year, there'll be lots of side conferences. The main conference will be in Johannesburg towards the end of the year. And then South Africa hands over to the United States in 2026. And that's all in the context of Donald Trump securing his second term as U.S. president. Now, the diplomatic tensions between South Africa and the U.S. notwithstanding, I think there are lots of opportunities for increased trade and maybe improved relations on a trade and investment front. So we'll need to see exactly for Trump the implementation of his policy around trade, protectionism, tariffs, how that impacts South Africa, and if South Africa can actually practice sort of non-alignment neutrality on some issues that would stand it in good stead. But all of this, as I said, with the caveat of you've got lots of choices and options within your own wheelhouse in terms of policy reform, with electricity, the ports, labor legislation, I mean, take everything that US South Africa can do, regardless of how things look from a G20 or even Trump administration point of view. So let's see if the government realizes that. Probably not, because it gives you an opportunity to be on the moral grandstand without having to actually do things in your own country.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, that's all the time we have for today. That's a wrap. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.